Anya, no matter how much he begs for it, just stall him. Once you sign the papers, you lose the chance of him ever coming back, Charlie said. I promise. As soon as Astrid had disembarked from the junk at Repulse Bay, Charlie made a phone call to Aaron Scheck, the chief financial officer of Wu Microsystems. Aaron, how's our share price doing today? We're up 2%. Great, great. Aaron, I want you to do me a special favor. I want you to look up a small digital firm based in Singapore called Cloud9 Solutions. Cloud9, Aaron began, keying the name into his computer. Headquartered in Jurong? Yes, that's the one. Aaron, I want you to acquire the company tomorrow. Start low, but I want you to end up offering at least $15 million for it. Actually, how many partners are there? I see two registered partners, Michael Teo and Adrian Balakrishnan. Okay, bid $30 million. Charlie, you can't be serious. The book value on that company is only... No, I'm dead serious, Charlie cut in. Start a fake bidding war between some of our subsidiaries if you have to. Now listen carefully. After the deal is done, I want you to vest Michael Teo, the founding partner, with Class A stock options. Then I want you to bundle it with that Cupertino startup we acquired last month and the software developer in Zhongguancun. Then I want us to do an IPO on the Shanghai Stock Exchange next month. Next month? Yes, it has to happen very quickly. Put the word out on the street. Let your contacts at Bloomberg TV know about it. Hell, drop a hint to Henry Blodgett if you think it will help drive up the share price. But at the end of the day, I want those Class A stock options to be worth at least $250 million. Keep it off the books and set up a shell corporation in Liechtenstein if you have to. Just make sure there are no links back to me. Never. Ever. Okay, you got it. Aaron was used to his boss's idiosyncratic requests. Thank you, Aaron. See you at CAA on Sunday with the kids. The 18th century Chinese junk pulled into Aberdeen Harbor just as the first evening lights began to turn on in the dense cityscape hugging the southern shore of Hong Kong Island. Charlie let out a deep sigh. If he didn't have a chance of getting Astrid back, he at least wanted to try to help her. He wanted her to find love again with her husband. He wanted to see the joy return to Astrid's face, that glow he had witnessed all those years ago at the bonfire on the beach. He wanted to pass it on. Chapter 18. Villa Doro, Singapore. Paik Lin walked down the stairs carrying a Bottega Veneta tote. Behind her were two Indonesian maids bearing a pair of Goyard suitcases and a carry-on valise. You do realize that we're going to be there for one night? You look like you've packed enough for a month-long safari, Rachel said incredulously. Oh, please, girls got to have options, Paik Lin said, tossing her hair comically. They were about to embark on the trip to Shenzhen, where Rachel had arranged to meet her father, an inmate at Dongguan Prison. She had initially been reluctant to set foot on another private jet, but Paik Lin had prevailed upon her. Trust me, Rachel, we can do this the easy way or the hard way, Paik Lin said. The hard way is to fly for 4.5 hours on some third-rate airline and land in the clusterfuck that is Shenzhen Bao'an International Airport, where we can wait in a customs line for the rest of the day with 30,000 of your closest friends, the vast majority of whom have never heard of antiperspirant and won't share the same concept of personal space as you do. Or we can call up NetJets right now and fly on leather seats made from cows that have never seen barbed wire, and drink Veuve Clicquot for the 2.5 hours it takes to fly to Shenzhen, where upon landing a young, fit customs officer will climb aboard our plane, stamp our passports, flirt with you because you're so pretty, and send us on our merry way. You know, flying private isn't always about showing off. Sometimes it can actually be for convenience and ease. But I'll defer to you. If you really want to go the chicken bus route, I'm game. This morning, however, with Rachel looking rather ashen-faced, Paik Lin began to wonder if the trip was a good idea so soon. You didn't get much sleep last night, did you? Paik Lin observed. I didn't realize how much I'd miss having Nick next to me at night, Rachel said softly. His gorgeous rock-hard body, you mean? Picklin added with a wink. Well, I'm sure he'd be happy to come over and climb back into bed with you in a nanosecond. No, no, that's not going to happen. I know it's over. It has to be, Rachel declared, her eyes moistening around the edges. Picklin opened her mouth to say something, but then she stopped herself. Rachel looked at her intently. Just say it. Picklin put her tote bag down and perched on the velvet brocade settee in the entrance foyer. I just think you need to give yourself some time before you make any final decisions about Nick. I mean, you're going through so much right now. Sounds like you're on his side, Rachel said. Rachel, what the fuck? I'm on your side. I want to see you happy, that's all. Rachel said nothing for a moment. She sat down on the staircase and ran her fingers along the cold, smooth marble. I want to be happy, but every time I think about Nick, I just go right back to the most traumatic moment of my life. Trump, the fattest of the three Pekingese, waddled into the foyer. Rachel picked up the dog and placed him on her lap. I guess that's why I feel like I need to meet my father. I remember watching some talk show one night where adopted children finally got reunited with their birth parents. Every single one of these kids, all of them were adults at this point, talked about how they felt after meeting their birth parents. Even if they didn't get along, even if their parents were nothing like what they expected, all of them somehow felt more whole after the experience. Well, in less than 4 hours, you'll be sitting face to face with your father, Picklin said. Rachel's face clouded over. You know, I'm dreading the drive up to that place. Dongguan Prison. Even the name sounds ominous. I don't think they want it to sound like it's Canyon Ranch. It's supposed to be medium security, so I wonder if we'll actually be in the same room together or whether I'll have to talk to him behind bars, Rachel said. Are you sure you want to do this? We really don't have to do this today, you know. I can just cancel the flight. It's not like your father's going anywhere, Picklin said. No, I want to go. I want to get this over with, Rachel said definitively. She ruffled the dog's golden fur for a moment and stood up, smoothing out her skirt. They made their way to the front door where the metallic gold BMW, already loaded with their luggage, awaited. Rachel and Picklin got into the back, and the chauffeur pulled down the sloping driveway toward the gilded electronic gates of Villa Doro. Just as the gates were opening, an SUV suddenly pulled up in front of them. "Who's the asshole blocking our way?" Picklin snapped. Rachel looked out the windshield and saw a silver Land Rover with tinted windows. Wait a minute, she began, thinking she recognized the car. The driver's door opened and Nick jumped out. Rachel sighed, wondering what kind of stunt he was trying to pull now. Was he going to insist on coming along to Shenzhen with them? Nick approached the car and rapped on the back window. Rachel lowered the window slightly. Nick, we have a plane to catch, she said in frustration. I appreciate that you want to help, but I really don't want you to go to China. I'm not going to China, Rachel. I'm bringing China to you, Nick said, flashing a smile. What? Rachel said, glancing at the Land Rover, half expecting a man in an orange jumpsuit and shackles to emerge. Instead, the passenger door opened and a woman in a pale orange trench coat dress with pixie-cut black hair stepped out. It was her mother. Rachel flung open her car door and jumped out hastily. What are you doing here? When did you arrive? She said defensively in Mandarin to her mother. I just landed. Nick told me what happened. I told him we had to stop you from going to China, but he said he wasn't going to get involved anymore. So I said I had to reach you before you try to meet your father. And Nick chartered a private plane for me, Carrie explained. I wish he hadn't, Rachel moaned in dismay. These rich people and their friggin' planes. I'm glad he did. Nick has been so wonderful, Carrie exclaimed. Great. Why don't you throw him a parade or take him out for oysters? I'm on my way to Shenzhen right now. I need to meet my father. Please, don't go. Carrie tried to grab hold of Rachel's arm, but Rachel jerked back defensively. Because of you, I've had to wait 29 years to meet my father. I'm not waiting another second, Rachel shouted. Daughter, I know you didn't want to see me, but I needed to tell you this myself. Zhu Fangmin is not your father. I'm not listening to you anymore, Mom. I'm tired of all the lies. I've read the articles about my kidnapping, and Mr. Goh's Chinese lawyers have already been in touch with my father. He's very eager to meet me, Rachel was adamant. Carrie looked pleadingly into her daughter's eyes. Please, believe me. You don't want to meet him. Your father is not the man in Duanggong prison. Your father is someone else, someone I truly loved. Oh, great. Now you're telling me I'm the illegitimate daughter of some other guy? Rachel could feel the torrent of blood rushing into her head, and she felt as if she was back in that horrific drawing room in Cameron Highlands. Just when things were beginning to make sense to her, everything was turned upside down again. Rachel turned to Pick Lin and gave her a dazed look. Could you ask your driver to step on his gas pedal and just run me over right now? Tell him to make it quick. Chapter 19. The Star Trek House. Singapore. Daisy Fu phoned Eleanor in a panic, telling her to come quickly, but Eleanor still could not believe her eyes when she entered the living room of Carol Tai's mansion, the one everyone called the Star Trek House. Sister Gracie, the Taiwan-born Houston-based Pentecostal preacher who had just flown in at Carol's request, circled around the lavishly appointed space as if in a trance, smashing up all the antique Chinese furniture and porcelain, while Carol and her husband sat in the middle of the room on the woven silk sofa, watching the destruction in a daze as two disciples of Sister Gracie's prayed over them. Following behind the diminutive preacher with tightly permed gray hair was a full brigade of servants, some helping to break the object she pointed at with her rosewood walking stick, others frantically sweeping up all the debris and putting it into giant black garbage bags.
False idols! Satanic objects! Leave this house of peace! Sister Gracie screamed, her voice echoing throughout the cavernous room.
Priceless Ming vases were smashed. Qing Dynasty scrolls were torn up, and gold-dipped Buddhas were toppled to the ground as Sister Gracie decreed every object bearing the depiction of an animal or a face to be satanic. Owls were satanic. Frogs were satanic. Grasshoppers were satanic. Lotus flowers, though not an animal and faceless, were also deemed satanic because of their association with Buddhist iconography. But there was none more evil than the devilish dragon.
Do you know why tragedy has befallen this house? Do you know why your firstborn son, Bernard, has defied your wishes and run off to Vegas to marry some pregnant soap opera harlot who pretends to be from Taiwan? It is because of these idols. Just look at the intricate lapis lazuli dragon on this imperial folding screen. Its evil ruby eyes have transfixed your son. You have surrounded him with symbols of sin every day of his life. What do you expect him to do but sin?
What utter nonsense is she talking? Bernard hasn't lived in this house for years, Lorena Lim whispered.
But Carol was looking at Sister Gracie as if she were receiving a message from Jesus Christ himself, and she continued to allow the wholesale destruction of antiquities that would have made any museum curator weep.
It's been like this for hours. They started in the Dato's study, Daisy whispered.
Eleanor jumped a little as Sister Gracie tipped over a chin-long funerary urn next to her.
Those snakes on that urn? Those snakes are descended from the one in the Garden of Eden, Sister Gracie screeched. A la Mac El, Lorena, come help me rescue some things from Carol's bedroom before Sister Gracie gets in there. If she sees that ivory sculpture of Kuan Yin, the goddess of mercy, she's going to start convulsing. That Kuan Yin has been around since the 12th century, but it will have no hope surviving this one, Daisy said furtively.
The three of them backed slowly away from the living room and made a beeline for Carol's bedroom. The ladies rushed about wrapping up any decorative objects that could possibly be at risk in towels and pillowcases and shoving them into their handbags and random shopping bags.
Those jade parrots! Grab those jade parrots! Daisy instructed.
Is the water buffalo considered satanic?
Lorena wondered, holding up a delicate horn carving.
Aya! Don't stand there using eye power! Take everything! Put it all in your handbag! We can return everything to Carol once she comes to her senses, Daisy barked.
I wish I'd used my Birkin and not my Kelly today,
Lorena lamented as she tried to fit the water buffalo into her stiff leather handbag.
Okay. My driver is parked just outside the kitchen door. Give me the first shopping bags and I will run them over to my car, Eleanor said. As she grabbed the first two shopping bags from Daisy, a maid entered Carol's bedroom. Eleanor knew she had to get past the maid with her suspiciously bulging shopping bags.
Gertie, fetch me a glass of iced tea with lemon, she said in her most imperious tone.
A la marque, Elle, it's me, Nadine! Eleanor almost dropped her shopping bags in shock. Nadine was utterly unrecognizable. She was dressed in yoga sweats, and gone was the thick mask of makeup, the overteased hair, and the ostentatious jewelry.
Oh my God, Nadine, what happened to you? I thought you were one of the maids, Eleanor exclaimed.
Nadine, I love your new look. Ah, yeah, now I can see how Francesca used to look just like you before her cheek implants, Daisy gushed.
Nadine smiled bleakly, plopping down on Carol's Huang Huali bed. My father-in-law woke up from his coma, as you know. We were all so happy, and when they discharged him from the hospital, we drove him home and had a surprise party waiting for him. All the Shaws were there, but we forgot the old man had never been to the new house. We bought Leiden Road after he had gone into a coma. Old man threw a fit when he realized this was our new house. He said, "Wow, who do you think you are living in such a big mansion with so many cars and servants?" Then, when he got inside and saw Francesca all dressed up, he started to choke. He started screaming that she looked like a prostitute from Geylang Red Light District. Ayah, she was wearing haute couture for her grandpa. Is it her fault that hemlines are so short this season? The very next morning, he made his lawyers take back control of Shaw Foods. He kicked my poor Ronnie off the board and he froze all the bank accounts, everything. Now he has ordered us to return every penny we've spent in the last 6 years, or he's threatening to disinherit all of us and give his whole fortune to the Shaw Foundation.
My goodness, Nadine, how are you managing? Lorena asked, gravely concerned.
Nadine was one of Lorient Jewelry's biggest clients, and her sudden reversal of fortune would surely affect the quarterly numbers.
Well, you see my new look? For now, we are all trying to act Kwai Kwai. I mean, how many more years can that old man live? He'll have another stroke in no time. I'll be fine. I spent years living in that cramped shop house with him, remember? We put Leiden Road on the market, but the problem is Francesca. She doesn't want to move back to a small house again. It's so malu for her. She's really suffering. Francesca was always Grandpa's favorite, and now he's taken away her monthly allowance. How is she supposed to live on her lawyer's salary? Wandy Megahardo and Parker Yeo have dropped her, and she's had to resign from every charitable board. She just can't afford the clothes for it anymore. She blames Ronnie and me. She comes into our bedroom every night and screams at us. She thinks we should have pulled the plug on the old man when we had the chance. Can you imagine? I never realized my own daughter could ever say such a thing.
I'm sorry to say this, Nadine, but this is what happens when you try to give your children everything, Daisy sagely offered. Look at what's happened with Bernard. From the time he was a small boy, I already knew he was a disaster waiting to happen. The Dato spoiled him rotten and never ever said no to him, and he thought he was being so clever, giving the boy that huge trust fund when he turned 18. Now look what's happened. They're getting Kitty Pong as a daughter-in-law. No amount of antique smashing is going to change that.
Lorena giggled. Poor Carol. She's always been such a good Christian, but now she has to deal with having a satanic kitty in her life. The ladies all laughed.
Well, at least we succeeded in stopping that Rachel Chu from getting at Nikki, Nadine commented.
Eleanor shook her head sadly.
What's the use? My Nikki has stopped talking to me. I don't have a clue where he is. He's even broken off contact with his grandmother. I tried calling Astrid to find him, but she's missing too.
Samtunga, you love your children so much. You do everything to try to protect them, and they don't even appreciate it.
Well, even if he doesn't want to see you right now, at least you succeeded in saving him from that girl, Lorena said comfortingly.
Yes,
but Nikki doesn't realize how much damage he's done to his relationship with his grandmother. I trained him to never, ever offend her, but he hurt her terribly in Cameron Highlands. You should have seen the old lady. She didn't speak once all the way back to Singapore. And take it from me, that woman never forgives. Now all the sacrifices I have made will have been for nothing, Eleanor said sadly, her voice cracking a little.
What do you mean? Nadine asked. What sort of sacrifices did you make for Nikki?
Eleanor sighed. Aya, Nadine, my whole life has been spent protecting him within my husband's family and positioning him to be the favorite grandson. I know my mother-in-law never truly approved of me, so I even got out of the way. I moved out of Tyersall Park so there wouldn't be two competing Mrs. Youngs. I always let her come first in Nikki's life, and because of this, he's been closer to her. But I accepted that. It was for his own good. He deserves to be the heir to her fortune, the heir to Tyersall Park, but he no longer seems to care. He would rather be a bloody history professor. Hiya, I always knew sending him to England would be a mistake. Why do we Chinese never learn? Every time we get mixed up with the West, everything falls apart.
Just then, Sister Gracie came walking down the lawn toward the bedroom pavilion with Carol and her husband trailing behind. She called out loudly,
Now, what demons lie in wait here?
Exodus chapter 20, verses 3 through 6 says, You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God.
Daisy glanced at the other ladies and said urgently,
Everyone, grab a shopping bag and run for the doors. Don't look at them, just keep moving.
Chapter 20 Villadora, Singapore. Paik Lin sequestered Rachel and her mother in the library, shutting the boiserie doors behind her firmly. She then padded out to the terrace bar overlooking the pool and began mixing margaritas for herself and Nick.
I think we both deserve about a dozen of these, don't we? She said, handing him a tall frosty glass.
Surrounded by bookshelves filled with gold-tooled leather volumes, Rachel perched on the cushioned bay window seat and stared out at the rose garden angrily. All she wanted to do was get on that plane to China, but once again Nick had screwed things up. Carrie grabbed one of the dark green leather chairs by the reading desk and turned it around so she could sit facing her daughter. Even though Rachel wouldn't look at her, she took a deep breath and began the story she had flown halfway around the world to tell.
Daughter, I have never told this story to anyone, and it is something I always intended to spare you from. I hope you will not judge me, and that you will listen with an open mind, an open heart. When I was 17, I fell in love with a man who was 6 years older. Yes, it was Zhu Fangmin. His family was from Xiamen in Fujian province. He was one of those red princelings, and he came from a rich family, at least for that time period. They were considered rich. His father was the general manager of a state-owned construction company. He was well-placed in the Communist Party, and one of his older brothers was a high-level party chief in Guangdong province. So the Zhus received the concession to build the new school in our village, and Fang Min was sent to oversee the construction. It was his summer job. Back then, I was in my final year of secondary school and working nights as a waitress in the only bar in our village, so that is how I met him. Now, up till this time, I had spent my entire life in this small village outside of Zhuhai. I had never even left our province, so you can only imagine what it was like when this 23-year-old man with slick black hair came into the bar dressed in Western-style clothes. I remember his shirts were all Sergio Tacchini or Fred Perry, and he wore a gold Rolex. What's more, Fang Min had an expensive motorbike
and chain-smoked Kent cigarettes, smuggled into the country by one of his cousins, and he would brag to me about his family's big house and big Japanese car and tell me tales of his holidays in Shanghai, Beijing, and Xi'an. I had never met a more handsome or sophisticated man, and I fell head over heels in love. Of course, back then, I had very long hair and fair skin, so Fang Min took an interest in me. Now, when my parents heard that this rich man was coming to the bar every night, taking an interest in me, they tried to put a stop to it. My parents were not like other parents. They did not care that he came from a rich family. They wanted me to concentrate on my studies so I could qualify for university. It was so hard to get into university in those days, especially if you were a girl. And that was my parents' sole dream, to have a child that got into university. But after so many years of being the perfect daughter and doing nothing but studying, I rebelled. Fang Min started taking me on his motorcycle in secret to Guangzhou, the biggest city in the province, and there I discovered a whole other world. I had no idea there was an entire class of people like Fang Min, the children of other high-ranking Communist Party members who got to dine in special restaurants and shop in special stores. Fang Min treated me to expensive meals and expensive clothes. I became intoxicated by this world, and my parents noticed that, bit by bit, I was changing. When they found out he had taken me to Guangzhou, they forbid me to see him, which of course made me want to be with him even more. It was like Romeo and Juliet. I would sneak out of our flat late at night to meet him, get caught and punished, but a few days later, I would do it again. Then, a few months later, when the construction project was finished and Fang Min was heading back to Xiamen, we made plans for me to run away with him. That's why I never finished my studies. I ran away to Xiamen, and we quickly got married. My parents were devastated, but I thought all my dreams had come true. Here I was, living in a big house with his rich and important parents, getting to ride in a big Nissan sedan that had white curtains on the back windows. See, Rachel, you are not the only one who has experienced dating a rich boy. But my dream quickly turned sour. I soon found out how awful his family was. His mother was one of these extremely traditional women, and she was a northerner from Hainan. So she was very snobbish, and she never let me forget that I was just a village girl who got very, very lucky because of my looks. At the same time, I was expected to perform 1,000,001 daughter-in-law duties, like preparing tea for her every morning, reading the newspapers to her, and rubbing her shoulders and feet after dinner every night. I had gone from being a student to being a servant. Then the pressure started for me to get pregnant, but I was having trouble conceiving. So it made my mother-in-law very upset. She wanted a grandchild desperately. What use was a daughter-in-law if you didn't have a grandchild? Fang Min's parents became very displeased that I wasn't getting pregnant, and we started having big fights. I don't know how I managed it, but I convinced Fang Min to move us to our own apartment. And that's when things turned into a living nightmare. Without his parents under the same roof to check on him, my husband suddenly lost interest in me. He went out drinking and gambling every night and started seeing other women. It was as if he was still single, and he would come home late at night completely drunk, and sometimes he wanted to have sex, but other times he just wanted to beat me up. It excited him. Then he would bring home other women to have sex in our bed, and he forced me to be with them. It was terrible. Rachel shook her head in dismay, making eye contact with her mother for the first time. I don't understand how you put up with that. Hiya! I was only 18. I was so naive and afraid of my worldly husband, and most of all,
I was too humiliated to tell my parents what a mistake I'd made. After all, I had run away and abandoned them in order to marry this rich boy, so I had to make the best of it. Now, right underneath our apartment, lived this family with one son. His name was Gao Wei, and he was a year younger than me. My bedroom happened to be right over him, so he could hear everything that was happening every night. One night, Fang Min came home in a rage. I'm not sure what made him so angry on this night. Maybe he lost some money gambling. Maybe one of his girlfriends got mad at him. Anyway, he decided to take it out on me. He began to break all the furniture in the apartment, and when he broke a chair and started coming after me with a jagged chair leg, I fled the apartment. I was so afraid that in his drunken rage, he would accidentally kill me. Cao Wei heard me leaving, so as I ran down the stairs, he opened his door and pulled me into his flat, while Fang Min ran outside of the building and began screaming in the street. That is how Cao Wei and I met. For the next few months, Cao Wei would comfort me after every bad fight and even help me devise tactics to avoid my husband. I would buy sleeping pills, crush them up, and put them into his wine so that he would fall asleep before he could get violent. I would invite his friends over for dinner and make them stay as late as possible until he passed out drunk. Cao Wei even put a stronger lock on the toilet door so that it would be harder for Fang Min to break through. Slowly but surely, Cao Wei and I fell in love. He was my only friend in the building, in the whole city, actually. And yes, we started to have an affair. But then, one day, we were almost caught, and I forced myself to end it, for Cao Wei's sake, because I feared Fang Min would kill him if he ever found out. A few weeks later, I realized I was pregnant with you, and I knew Cao Wei was the father. Wait a minute. How did you know for sure he was the father? Rachel asked, uncrossing her arms and leaning back against the window. Trust me, Rachel, I just knew. But how? This was back before DNA testing. Carrie shifted in her chair awkwardly, searching for the right words to explain. One of the reasons I had such a hard time getting pregnant was because Fang Min had peculiar habits, Rachel. Because of his drinking, he had trouble getting erect, and when he was excited, he only liked to have a certain type of sex, and I knew I could not get pregnant that way. Oh, ooh, Rachel said, turning crimson when she realized what her mother meant. Anyway, you look so much like Cao Wei. There is no mistaking that he is your father. Cao Wei had beautiful, angular features like you do, and you have his refined lips. So, if you are in love with Cao Wei, why didn't you just divorce Fang Min and marry Cao Wei? Why did you have to resort to kidnapping? Rachel was leaning forward now with her chin in her hands, completely transfixed by her mother's harrowing tale. Let me finish the story, Rachel, and then you will understand. So here I was, 18 years old, married to this violent drunkard, and pregnant with another man's child. I was so frightened that Fang Min would somehow realize the baby wasn't his, and he would kill Cao Wei and me. So I tried to hide my pregnancy for as long as possible. But my old-fashioned mother-in-law recognized all the telltale signs, and it was she who declared to me a few weeks later that she thought I looked pregnant. At first, I was terrified. But you know what? The most unexpected thing happened. My in-laws were overjoyed that at last they were having their first grandchild. My evil mother-in-law suddenly transformed into the most caring person you could possibly imagine. She insisted that I move back into the big house so that the servants could look after me properly. I felt so relieved, like I had been rescued from hell. Even though I didn't really need to, She forced me to stay in bed most of the time and made me drink these traditional brews all day long to boost the health of the baby. I had to take 3 types of ginseng every day and eat young chicken in broth. I'm convinced this is why you were such a healthy baby, Rachel. You never got sick like other babies. No ear infections, no high fevers, nothing. At that time, there wasn't a sonogram machine in Xiamen yet, so my mother-in-law invited a famous fortune teller over, who divined that I was going to have a boy, and that the boy was going to grow up to become a great politician. This made my in-laws even more excited. They hired a special nursemaid to take care of me, a girl who had natural double eyelids and big eyes because my mother-in-law believed that if I stared at this girl all day, my child would come out with double eyelids and big eyes. That's what all the mothers in China wanted then, children with big Western-style eyes. They painted a room bright blue and filled it up with baby furniture and all these boy clothes and toys. There were airplanes and train sets and toy soldiers. I had never seen so many toys in all my life. One night, my water broke and I went into labor. They rushed me to the hospital and you were born a few hours later. It wasn't easy labor. I've always told you that. And at first, I was worried they would see that you looked nothing like their son. But that turned out to be the least of my worries. You were a girl, and my in-laws were extremely shocked. They were outraged at the fortune teller, but they were more outraged at me. I had failed them. I had failed to do my duty. Fang Min was also terribly upset, and if I hadn't been living with my in-laws, I'm sure he would have beaten me half to death. Now, because of China's one-child policy, all couples were banned from having a second child. By law, I could not have another, but my in-laws were desperate for a boy, a male heir who could carry on the family name. If we had lived in the countryside, they might have just abandoned or drowned the baby girl. Don't look so shocked, Rachel. It happened all the time. But we were living in Xiamen, and the Zhus were an important local family. People already knew that a baby girl had been born, and it would have been disgraceful for them to reject you. However, there was one loophole to the one-child rule. If your baby had a handicap, you were allowed to have another. I didn't know this, but even before I had come home from the hospital, my evil in-laws were already hatching a plan. My mother-in-law decided that the best thing to do was to pour acid in your eye.
What? Rachel shrieked.
Carrie swallowed hard before continuing. Yes. They wanted to blind you in one eye, and if they did this while you were a newborn, the cause of the blinding could look like it was just a birth defect.
My God!
Rachel clasped her hand to her mouth in horror. So she began to devise a scheme with some of the older servants, who were very loyal to her. But the special maid they had hired to take care of me while I was pregnant did not share the same unwavering loyalty. We had become friends, and when she found out about their plan, she told me about it on the very day I arrived home from the hospital with you. I was so shocked. I could not believe anyone could think of harming you in this way, much less your own grandparents. I was beside myself with rage and still weak from childbirth, but I was determined that nobody was going to blind you. Nobody was going to hurt you. You were my beautiful baby girl, the baby from the man who rescued me, the man I truly loved. So a couple of days later, in the middle of lunch, I excused myself to go to the toilet. I walked down the hallway toward the downstairs toilet, which was across from the servants' quarters, where you were being kept in a cot while the family ate. The servants were all having their lunch in the kitchen, so I went into their room, scooped you into my arms, and walked straight out the back door. I kept walking until I came to the bus stop, and I got on the next bus. I didn't know any of the bus routes or anything. I just wanted to get as far away from the zoo house as possible. When I thought I was far enough, I got off the bus and found a phone to call Kaway. I told him I had just had a baby and was running away from my husband, and he came to the rescue immediately. He hired a taxi. In those days, it was very expensive to hire one, but somehow he managed and came to pick me up. All that time, he was already devising a plan to get me out of Xiamen. He knew that my in-laws would have alerted the police as soon as they discovered that the baby was missing, and police would be searching for a woman and her baby. So he insisted on coming with me so that we could pretend to be a couple. We bought 2 tickets on the 6 o'clock train, which was the busiest train, and we sat in the most crowded car, trying to blend in with all the other families. Thank goodness, no police ever came on board the train. Gawei took me all the way to my home village in Guangdong province and made sure I was safely with my parents before he left. That was the kind of man he was. I will always be glad that your real father was the one who rescued us, and that he at least had the chance to spend a few days with you.
But didn't he mind leaving me? Rachel asked, her eyes welling up with tears.
He didn't know you were his, Rachel.
Rachel looked at her mother in shock.
Why didn't you tell him?
Carrie sighed. Kaway was already far too mixed up in my problems, the problems of another man's wife. I didn't want to burden him with the knowledge that you were his child. I knew he was the type of man who would have wanted to do the honorable thing, that he would have wanted to take care of us somehow. But he had a bright future ahead of him. He was very smart and was doing well at school in science. I knew he would get into university, and I didn't want to ruin his future.
You didn't think he suspected he was my father?
I don't think so. He was 18, remember, and I think at that age, fatherhood is the last thing on a boy's mind. And besides, I was now a criminal, a kidnapper. So Gawei was worrying about us getting caught more than anything else. My awful husband and my in-laws used the situation to blame me for everything and plaster my name in all the newspapers. I don't think they really cared about you. They were glad the baby girl was out of their lives, but they wanted to punish me. Usually the police didn't get involved in family matters like this. But that politician uncle of Fang Min's put pressure on the police, and they came looking for me in my parents' village.
What happened then?
Well, they put my poor mother and father under house arrest and subjected them to weeks of interrogation. Meanwhile, I was already in hiding. Your grandparents sent me to a distant cousin of theirs in Shenzhen, a Chu, and through her, the opportunity came up for me to bring you to America. A Chu cousin in California had heard about my situation, your Uncle Walt, and he offered to fund our way to America. He was the one who sponsored us, and that is how I came to change your name and my name to Chu.
What happened to your parents? My real grandparents? Are they still in Guangdong?
Rachel asked nervously, not sure she wanted to know the answer.
No. They both died rather young, in their early 60s.
The Zhu family used their influence to destroy your grandfather's career, and it destroyed his health, from what I know. I was never able to see them, because I never dared to return to China or to try to make contact with them. If you had flown to China this morning to meet Zhu Fangmin, I would not have dared to follow you. That's why when Nick found out about your China plans and told me, I flew straight to Singapore.
And what happened to Kaway?
Carrie's face clouded over.
I have no idea what happened to Kaway. For the first few years, I would send him letters and postcards from America as often as possible, from every town and city we lived in. I always used a secret name we had devised together, but I never got a single response. I don't know if my letters ever got to him.
Aren't you curious to find him? Rachel asked, her voice cracking with emotion.
I tried my hardest not to look back, daughter. When I got on that plane with you to come to America, I knew I had to leave my past behind.
Rachel turned to face the window, her chest heaving involuntarily. Carrie got up from her chair and walked toward Rachel slowly. She reached out to put her hand on her daughter's shoulder, but before she could, Rachel leaped up and embraced her mother.
"Oh, Mom," Rachel cried. "I'm so sorry. So sorry for everything. For all the terrible things I said to you on the phone."
"I know, Rachel. I never knew. I never could have imagined what you were forced to go through." Carrie looked at her daughter affectionately, tears running down her cheeks.
"I'm sorry I never told you the truth. I wanted so much never to burden you with my mistakes."
"Oh, Mom,"
Rachel sobbed, clinging to her mother ever more tightly.
The sun was setting over Bukit Timah by the time Rachel walked out into the garden, arm in arm with her mother. Heading slowly toward the poolside bar, they made a detour the long way around the pool so that Carrie could admire all of the golden statues. "It looks like mother and daughter have reconciled, don't you think?" Paiklin said to Nick.
"Sure looks like it. I don't see any blood or torn clothing."
"There better not be. That's Lan Van Rachel's wearing. Cost me about 7K.
"Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one who's guilty of being extravagant with her. She can't blame it all on me anymore," Nick said.
"Let me share a secret with you, Nick. As much as a girl might protest, you can never go wrong buying her a designer dress or a killer pair of shoes."
"I'll try to remember that," Nick smiled. "Well, I think I'd better be off."
"Oh, stop it, Nick. I'm sure Rachel would want to see you. And aren't you dying to know what they've been talking about all this time?"
Rachel and her mother approached the bar.
"Paiklin, you look so cute standing there behind the bar. Can you make me a Singapore sling?"
Carrie asked. Paiklin gave a slightly embarrassed smile.
I don't know how to make that. I've never actually had one."
"What? Isn't it the most popular drink here?"
Carrie said in surprise.
"Well, I guess if you're a tourist..."
"I am a tourist."
"Well then, Mrs. Chu, why don't you let me take you out for a Singapore sling?"
"Okay, why not?"
Carrie said excitedly. She placed a hand on Nick's shoulder.
"Are you coming, Nick?"
I don't know, Mrs. Chu," Nick began, glancing nervously at Rachel.
Rachel hesitated for a moment before responding.
"Come on, let's all go."
Nick's face lit up.
"Really? I do know a good place we could go."
Soon, the four of them were in Nick's car approaching the island's most distinctive architectural landmark.
"Wow, what an amazing building," Carrie Chu said, gazing up in awe at the three soaring towers joined at the top by what appeared to be a huge park.
"That's where we're going. At the top is the world's highest man-made park, 57 stories above ground," Nick said.
"You are not seriously taking us to the Sky Bar at Marina Bay Sands?" Paiklin grimaced.
"Why not?" Nick asked.
"I thought we'd be going to Raffles Hotel, where the Singapore sling was invented."
"Raffles is too touristy."
"And this isn't? You'll see, it's going to be all mainlanders and European tourists up there."
"Trust me, the bartender is brilliant," Nick declared authoritatively.
10 minutes later, the four of them were sitting in a sleek white cabana in the middle of the 2.5-acre terrace perched in the clouds. Samba music filled the air, and several feet away, an immense infinity pool spanned the length of the park.
"Cheers to Nick," Rachel's mother declared. "Thank you for bringing us here."
"I'm so glad you like it, Mrs. Chu," Nick said, peering around at the ladies.
"Well, I have to admit, the Singapore sling is better than I imagined," Paiklin said, taking another sip of her frothy crimson drink.
"So you're not going to cringe the next time some tourist sitting next to you orders one?" Nick said with a wink.
"Depends on how they're dressed," Paiklin retorted.
For a few moments, they sat savoring the view. Across the bay, the blue hour was settling in, and the crowd of skyscrapers lining the marina seemed to glisten in the balmy air. Nick turned toward Rachel, his eyes searching out hers. She hadn't spoken once since they left Paiklin's house. Their eyes met for a flash of a moment before Rachel turned away. Nick jumped off his bar stool and walked down a few steps toward the infinity pool. As he strolled along the water's edge, a bold silhouette against the darkening sky, the woman studied him in silence.
"He's a good man, that Nick," Carrie finally said to her daughter.
"I know," Rachel said quietly.
"I'm so glad he came to see me," Carrie said.
"Came to see you? Rachel was confused.
Of course. He showed up on my doorstep in Cupertino 2 days ago.
Rachel stared at her mother, her eyes widening in amazement. Then she jumped off her bar stool and made a beeline toward Nick. He turned to face her just as she approached. Rachel slowed her pace, turning to look at a couple of swimmers doing disciplined laps around the pool. Those swimmers look like they might fall right off the horizon, she said.
They do, don't they?
Rachel took a slight breath.
Thank you for bringing my mom here.
No worries. She needed a good drink.
To Singapore, I mean.
Oh, it was the least I could do.
Rachel looked at Nick tenderly.
I can't believe you did this. I can't believe you went halfway around the world and back for me in 2 days. Whatever possessed you to do such a crazy thing?
Nick flashed his trademark grin.
Well, you can thank a little bird for that.
A little bird?
Yes, a little blue jay that hates Damien Hirst.
At the bar, Carrie was nibbling the pineapple wedge from her third cocktail when Paik Lin whispered excitedly,
Mrs. Chu, don't turn around now, but I spy Nick giving Rachel a long, slow kiss.
Carrie swiveled around joyously and sighed.
Ayah, so romantic. A la Mark, don't look, I told you not to look, Paik Lin scolded.
When Nick and Rachel came back, Carrie scrutinized Nick up and down for a moment and yanked at his rumpled linen shirt.
Ayah, you've lost too much weight. Your cheeks are so sallow. Let me fatten you up a bit. Can we go to one of those outdoor food bazaars that Singapore is so famous for? I want to eat 100 sticks of satay while I am here.
Okay, let's all go to the Chinatown food market on Smith Street, Nick beamed.
A la Mark, Nick. Smith Street gets so crowded on Friday nights and there's never any place to sit,
Paik Lin complained.
Why don't we go to Glutton's Bay?
I knew you were going to suggest that. All you princesses love to go there.
No, I just happen to think they have the best satay,
Paik Lin said defensively.
Rubbish. Satay is the same wherever you go. I think Rachel's mum would find Smith Street to be more colorful and authentic, Nick argued.
Authentic, my foot, la. If you really want authentic, Paik Lin began.
Rachel glanced at her mother. They can do all the arguing. We'll just sit back and eat.
But why are they arguing so much over this?
Carrie asked, amazed. Rachel rolled her eyes and smiled.
Let them be, Mom. Let them be.
This is just how they all are. This is Lin Chen. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Crazy Rich Asians by Kevin Kwan. This program was directed by Christina Rooney, executive producer Aaron Blank. Text copyright 2013 by Kevin Kwan. Production copyright 2013, Random House, Inc. Grateful acknowledgement is made to Kurt Kaiser for permission to reprint an excerpt from the song Pass It On from Tell It Like It Is, reprinted by permission of the artist. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.